Now, what is famous is that the Prophet, peace be on him, had 6 children from Khadija. And these children, in the order of their age, were first of all Qasim, a son who died at the age of 2 in Mecca, and this was before Ba'tha, of course. This was his first child actually from Khadija, and that's why the Prophet is called Abu al-Qasim. Then there is Zainab, the eldest daughter of the Prophet. She was born 10 years before Ba'tha and was married before Islam to her cousin, the son to her maternal aunt, that's Khadija's sister, who was called Abu al-As ibn Rabi'. She migrated to Medina after Badr and passed away 8 years after Hijra. Now, this, of course, there are lots of stories about Abu al-As and him being captured in the Battle of Badr, then Zainab sending some ransom to free him, and of course Prophet set a condition there that Abu al-As would go back and divorce Zainab and send Zainab to Medina. And of course when Zainab was coming to Medina, someone by the name of Habbar ibn Aswad actually attacked her and the people who were accompanying him to somehow bring her back to Mecca. And she was pregnant at the time and she had a miscarriage. And this is a very famous story. Ibn Abi al-Hadid mentions in the commentary to Nahjul Balagha that my teacher, Abu Ja'far al-Naqib, who was a very famous Sunni Mu'tazilite scholar, he said that it's famous that after the conquest of Mecca, the Prophet, peace be on him, of course, you know, he gave a general amnesty to everyone, but a few people were excluded from that general amnesty. One of them was this Habbar, because he actually called Zainab to have a miscarriage of her child. And then Ibn Abi al-Hadid says that my teacher Abu Ja'far al-Naqib told me that if Prophet set this very severe punishment for Habbar because of what he did and terrified Zainab and she actually aborted her child, then what would the Prophet have done for those who caused Muhsin or Fatima to be aborted? And then Ibn Abi al-Hadid says, I was very much surprised, because this was the word of Shias, not the word of Sunnis, actually, saying that Fatima had a miscarriage because of what happened after the Prophet. And he says that I asked Abu Ja'far al-Naqib, my teacher, that do you then believe that what the Shia say is right, that Fatima has a miscarriage because of being terrified? And he says that I don't report it, and I don't deny it, and do not report this from me. And Ibn Abi al-Hadid mentions the whole story. He does not report it from his teacher, of course, but he says, my teacher said, I do not deny this, I do not report it. So it was a very famous story about Zainab having this incident on the way going to Medina. And then the next daughter of the Prophet was Ruqayya, who was born after Zainab and married her cousin Utbah, son of Abu Lahab. Now you might be surprised why son of Abu Lahab, the greatest enemy of the Prophet, peace be on him. However, he was not an enemy of the Prophet. He was very kind to the Prophet before he started to proclaim the Dawah. He was a very noble person and someone who, of course, everyone knew him because of his character and everything. So Abu Lahab was probably, his son was probably the best type of person to be named for Ruqayya. Before Ba'tha, of course. However, one very strange thing happened, and that is after Prophet, because this marriage was just immediately before Prophet was given the revelation. So after he said that I am the prophet of God, Abu Lahab, of course, ordered his son to divorce prophet's daughter. And this was before the confirmation of the marriage. And one of the hardships that prophet went through was, of course, in his family as well. And this shows us how prophet was steadfast. I mean, he was threatened in every aspect. Also, his family was somehow endangered because it was very hard for a daughter to get divorced before confirmation of the marriage. And of course, prophet accepted all these things because of his da'wah, because of a mission he had from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So Utbah son of Abu Lahab divorced her. And of course, this was, some people say that this was after the revelation of Tabbat Yada Abi Lahab, but apparently it was even before that time. And then she was married to Uthman ibn Affan, the famous Uthman, or the infamous Uthman, or whatever you want to say. Once I was teaching them about the history in Iran, of course it was, and I said Uthman ibn Affan, and someone asked, is this our own Uthman or someone else? I said, no, it's our own Uthman. So this is our own Uthman. And of course, questions are raised. Why? By the Shias. Why Prophet did allow or did actually accept his daughter to be married with Uthman? You can imagine, maybe Uthman was one of the best nominees to marry the daughter of the Prophet. He was among the first 10 people who converted to Islam. He was from a very noble family. He went through lots of hardships. From among the first people who migrated to Habasha, Abyssinia, and from among the first people who migrated to Medina. So you cannot actually judge what Prophet did in the hindsight. I mean, forget about things happened after the demise of the Prophet. You just put the whole story in its context, and you would see that it was quite rational for the Prophet. If Uthman ever actually asked for his daughter's hand, Prophet, of course, would have accepted. It would have been some sort of unreasonable rejection if the Prophet had rejected this marriage with Uthman, who was one of the most prominent Muslims at the time. And also, the other thing is that these ladies were ordinary women. They were not like Fatima. Fatima was, of course, special. And we have this hadith reported by Khulaini that لَوْلَا أَنَّ اللَّهَ خَلَقَ أَمِيرَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ مَا كَانَ لِفَاطِمَةَ كُفْوٌ عَلَى وَجْهِ الْأَرْضِ. If Allah had not created Amirul Mu'mineen, Fatima wouldn't have had any match for her marriage. And it's true. Of course, Fatima was very special. Like Khadija. Khadija was very special as well. And then the argument comes whether Khadija was married before Prophet or not. Even if she did marry before the Prophet, which, a majority of the scholars say she did, her husbands were not worse than Fir'aun, were they? Of course, Asiya, who was one of those very, very special ladies and women, had married Fir'aun. And this is an example given to us in the Qur'an. ضَرَبَ اللَّهُ مَثَلًا لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِمْرَأَةَ فِرْعَوْنَ إِذْ قَالَتْ رَبِّ ابْنِ لِي عِنْدَكَ بَيْتًا فِي الْجَنَّةِ. This is an example. The wife of Fir'aun. So why shouldn't the Prophet, for example, agree with the marriage of his daughter to someone like Uthman, who was very well known for his Islam at the beginning? And then, of course, since the second daughter of the Prophet, this Ruqayya, passed away in the second year of Hijrah, 3 days after the Battle of Badr. And in fact, on the same day when the good news of victory of Muslimun arrived in Medina, Ruqayya passed away. And since Prophet's other daughter, Umm Kulthum, was also married to another son of Abu Lahab, Utaybah ibn Abi Lahab, and she was divorced because of the mission of the Prophet, and then she was not married until after migration. It was quite reasonable that Uthman would have asked for to marry his wife's sister, Umm Kulthum. Now, there are, after of course last week there was a mention of there were doubts coming up about Prophet having such daughters at all, and then Uthman have married them. I really had a search in the sources who denied it, and the reasons they give, the arguments they bring in, are very, very weak. It's just because they want to deny that Prophet's daughters were married to Uthman. And as I said, this is something which, if you put it in its context, is not unreasonable. If Zainab was married to Abu al-As ibn Rabi', her cousin, and this was before Islam, of course, and he was a noble man, he was a gentleman, but he did not convert to Islam, and of course Prophet asked him to divorce his daughter. Well, very reasonable, and these things could have happened about Uthman marrying the other two daughters of the Prophet. What is special, of course, Fatima. Fatima was a special daughter of the Prophet, not like other daughters of the Prophet. And therefore, yes, of course, it would have been somehow a question if Prophet would have agreed that Fatima would have married Abu Bakr or Umar ibn al-Khattab, according to our opinion, of course, because they asked for her hand before Ali, peace be on him, and Prophet did reject that. And of course said that it's Allah who decides about who should marry Fatima. So that's a special type of lady. Another issue here is the fact about the other daughter or son of Khadija, which again has come up in the history, whether she did have any son or any daughter before the Prophet. Again, the reasons given for that are very, very weak. And going through this history, one other thing will become clear. You know, there is a dispute about the age of Fatima, because the majority of Sunni scholars put her age when she married Ali, peace be on him, at 18, if I'm right. And of course, the Shi'i opinion is 9, because the Sunni scholars say that she was born 5 years. The Sunni scholars say she was born 5 years before Ba'tha, and Sunni scholars say she was born 5 years after Ba'tha. And if it was 5 years after Ba'tha, and she married Ali, peace be on him, on the first or second year of Hijrah, then she was either 9 or 10. And according to the other tradition, which nowadays seem more plausible, and many even contemporary Shi'i scholars have actually been inclined to that, she was about 19 or 20 years old when she married Ali ibn Abi Talib. However, this seems very, very odd, because you look at the age of other daughters of the Prophet when they married. They were either 8 or 9. And that was the common custom at the time. A girl exceeding the age of 12, not marrying, there was something wrong there. And you shouldn't actually compare that with our custom nowadays, that this is a crime to marry a girl of 12 or 9 or something like that. And of course we think that the girls should study, come to the age of 18, 19, 20, even 25, before they could marry, or they are ready for marriage. This was not a custom at the time. And of course, there are advantages to this, disadvantages to this, we can argue. However, since other daughters of the Prophet all married at the age of 8 or 9, and every girl actually in that custom or in that culture married at that age, it is quite it is a somehow support for the Shi'i opinion that Fatima was born 5 years after Bertha, and she passed away at the age of 18. Now, the other children of Prophet from Khadija, Fatima, of course we don't want to talk about her now, because of course more famous than any discussion we can offer here. And as I put it in this slide, she was born 5 years after Ba'tha. And Abdullah, born after Ba'tha, and was nicknamed as Tayyib and Tahir, he passed away in Mecca, and he was either 2 or 3 years old. After his demise, Aas ibn Wa'il called the Prophet Abtar, because of course the girls were not counted. Prophet before this had a son Qasim, and now a son Abdullah from Khadija. He passed away as well when he was very young, and therefore Aas ibn Wa'il called the Prophet to be Abtar, not having any generation, any progeny. And then this was the cause of revelation of Surah Al-Kawthar. Inna a'tainaka al-Kawthar fasalli li rabbika wanhar inna shani'aka huwal abtar. Although we haven't given you any son, and all your sons have passed away, however, we have given you something much better, and that's Kawthar. Now, what Kawthar is, it's a point of controversy among exegetes. I don't want to enter that discussion. But it says, so give thanks to your Lord, pray for him, and sacrifice for him. فَسَلِّ لِرَبِّكَ وَنْحَرْ إِنَّ شَانِئَكَ هُوَ الْأَبْتَرْ. Your enemy is Abtar, is without progeny. And it is, of course, an irony, because the progeny of the Prophet through Fatima are so huge in number that I don't think the progeny of any person in the history has been as big as Prophet's progeny. And Aas ibn Wa'il, of course, his progeny just died out gradually. Now, Prophet had one child only from his other wives, and this is again another strange and amazing thing. You know, Prophet had 13 wives. When he passed away, 9 wives were alive, and from none of those 13 wives he had any child, except from Khadija and one from Maria al-Qibtiya. Qibti means Egyptian. Of course, this was a slave girl gifted to the Prophet by the King of Egypt. When Prophet sent a messenger to the King, of course the King respected the Prophet. He did not convert to Islam, but respected the Prophet, respected the message, and sent a gift, a series of gifts to the Prophet. One of them was Maria. When she came to Medina, Prophet of course freed her and then married with her. And from Maria, she had one son again, who was called Ibrahim. And this famous story of Ibrahim, when he passed away, Prophet cried, and the companions asked him, do you cry because of what God has destined for you? And he said, of course, I'm a human being. The eyes cry, but the heart is firm with belief, with faith in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this is why Maria Qibtiya is called Ummu Ibrahim. And maybe those of you who have been to Hajj, there is a place in Medina called Mashrabatu Ummu Ibrahim. The place of Ummu Ibrahim had a spring or something from which she used to drink and wash. And I don't know whether the water still is there or not. Probably not. But that's a place called Mashrabatu Ummu Ibrahim. That's Maria, of course. Maria Al-Qibtiya. So this is the only child of the Prophet from her other wives. And as Quran mentions, as I said, it's strange, because Quran says, مَا كَانَ مُحَمَّدٌ أَبَى أَحَدٍ مِّن رَجَالِكُمْ. Muhammad is not father of any of your men. And he was not destined to be father of any of the men of his time. Why Allah had destined such that Prophet shouldn't have any son? We don't know. Now, apart from these 7 children, Prophet had an adopted son as well, who was called Zayd. The only companion of the Prophet whose name is mentioned in the Quran. You know, Quran doesn't mention names. Of course, names of enemies of the Prophet Abu Lahab is mentioned, but companions of the Prophet, no one is mentioned. Except Zayd. Why? Again, we don't know. Apparently, Zayd was someone who dealt with all affairs of the Prophet after he became a Prophet. And Zayd was a slave boy gifted to Khadija, long before Ba'tha, of course, about 12, 13 years before Ba'tha, gifted to Khadija by her uncle. And the Prophet asked her to give that slave boy to him. And she agreed. And as soon as Prophet received that, he set the boy free. And said, you can go or you can stay with us. And he decided to stay with the Prophet. And Prophet adopted him as his son. Now, there were rules in old Arab customs about adopted sons or daughters. And that was, when you adopt a son, they become exactly like your own son. Any rule or any regulation which goes for your own family or for your own son would be obligatory about the adopted son. And of course, this rule should have been broken because, of course, it's not very reasonable, not very rational. Conventions cannot substitute the genetical type of bond. So, one incident happened, and the incident is mentioned in full in Surah Al-Ahzab. And that is, Prophet actually had suggested that Zayd marry her cousin, Zainab bint Jahsh. His cousin, Zainab bint Jahsh. And Zayd had married her, but they couldn't get on with each other very well. And Zayd wanted to divorce Zainab. Prophet had seen, whether in dream or with revelation, that Zainab is going to be his own wife. Not Zainab, not Zayd's wife. And therefore, when Zayd came with the suggestion that I want to divorce Zainab, Prophet, of course, said, why you want to do it? He knew that this is going to happen, but he said, why you want to do it? Keep your wife. It's not good to divorce her. However, Zayd insisted. And Prophet, of course, agreed with the divorce and then married Zainab. Now, this was, of course, a type of breaking a taboo in Arab culture, marrying the wife of the adopted son. Now, the Quran, in Surah Al-Ahzab, if you go through the Surah Al-Ahzab, it says that مَا جَعَلَ اللَّهُ لِرَجُلٍ مِنْ جَوْفَيْنِ فِي قَلْبِهِ at the beginning of the Surah. Allah hasn't put two hearts in one chest. And وَمَا جَعَلَ أَزْوَاجَكُمُ اللَّهِ تُظَاهِرُونَ مِنْهُنَّ أُمَّهَاتِكُمْ وَمَا جَعَلَ أَدْعِيَاءَكُمْ أَبْنَاءَكُمْ. Allah has not put your adopted son as your own son. ذَلِكُمْ قَوْلُكُمْ بِأَفْوَاهِكُمْ. This is just a convention between you, among yourself. You have made this convention with your word of mouth. There's no reality behind it. And then, in the middle of the surah, it mentions the story of Zayd and his wife. That, وَإِذْ تَقُولُ لِلَّذِي أَنْعَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَأَنْعَمْتَ عَلَيْهِ. When you said to the person upon whom Allah has given his favor and you had blessed him with your own favors, أمسك عليك زوجك واتق الله وتخش وتخفي ما في نفسك ما الله مبديه وتخشى الناس. You were fearful of the people. You knew that you are going to marry Zainab, but you were fearful, if I do that, what the people are going to tell me. And of course, Allah was going to make this open for you, and everyone should know that the wives of adopted sons are not as wife of your son, and the story goes on. So, Zayd is very famous, mentioned in the Quran, and very, of course, faithful. And he had a son, Osama ibn Zayd, who, when he was 18, Prophet set him to lead the army out of Medina at the time of his demise. You know, of course, the story that at the time of his demise, Prophet wanted all the companions go out of Medina because he knew of the conspiracy and everything that was going to take place. So he set up a jaysh, an army, and he put Osama at the head of the army, who was 18, and said to Abu Bakr, Umar, Amr ibn al-As, everyone, Jumu'l Al-Tawb Medina, under his command. And this was, of course, very difficult for them to go under the command of an 18-year-old boy. And, of course, you know this story. They didn't go until Prophet passed away. And, of course, the whole issue of rulership and these things were decided by them. Now, also, the Prophet brought up Ali too. Not adopted him as his son, but he took Ali to his house when he was 6 years old due to the poverty of Abu Talib, who couldn't support all his children. And therefore, we can say in the life of the Prophet, there were 9 children who actually lived in his house. Some of them passed away, some of them were his own children, and some of them were children whom he adopted or brought up for other people. Is there any question or comment regarding to this issue? Okay, we can move on now. Of course, these slides, some of them belong to the last week's session.
Sorry, this is the Prophet has nine wives, so the rule about having four wives, that's for other Muslim men.
Prophet had a special type of rules for himself, which is mentioned again in Surah Al-Ahzab. And Allah says, we know what we have set as rule for other Muslim mu'minun, and we know what we have set for you as a rule. Now, we discussed about, if you turn to page 5, the second slide. We discussed about the revelation, the first instance of revelation, and the two accounts of revelation. Of course, the first slide talks about the two accounts of revelation. One account puts Prophet as a sleepwalker, someone who didn't know what was happening, of course. He was just fumbling around the Alamul Ghaib. He didn't know who had come to his contact. Was it a jinn? Was it an evil spirit? Was it an angel? This is one account of the revelation. The second account gives the a picture of the Prophet as a conscious soul who very well knew. And this is the account given by Ibn Ishaq, Ibn Hisham, although in a different way. The only book which gives that account of Prophet as a sleepwalker is Bukhari, who was not a historian as well. He just reports something which doesn't go with the account of historians as well. Now, after Prophet, of course, received the first revelation, this was Surah Al-Alaq, the five first verses of Surah Al-Alaq. اقرأ بسم ربك الذي خلق خلق الإنسان من علق اقرأ وربك الأكرم الذي علم بالقلم علم الإنسان ما لم يعلم. This was the whole revelation revealed to the Prophet in Hira at the beginning. And then, of course, Prophet came home. Maybe he was affected by that instance of revelation physically, because we know that Prophet was really affected physically in many instances by the revelation. Sometimes the revelation was very hard for him to receive. Even he fainted sometimes. So it was not unreasonable to think that Prophet somehow felt some illness after receiving the first revelation. And that's why he went home. Maybe he felt cold, so a blanket or a cloak put on him by Khadija, and somehow he wrapped himself in that cloak. And therefore, the two other consecutive surahs coming down to him addresses him in that way, Ya Ayyuhal Mudassir and Ya Ayyuhal Muzammil. Now, the historians of the Quran say that the first surah revealed to the Prophet after he came down from Hira was Ya Ayyuhal Mudassir. قُمْ فَأَنْذِرْ وَرَبَّكَ فَكَبِّرْ. Of course, not the whole surah, because then if we think it's the whole surah, then we come to difficulty of synchronizing the subject in the surah with other issues which happen in the life of the Prophet. So we say only the first again, 5 verses or 4 verses of the surah was revealed. Ya ayyuhal muddathir, O you who has wrapped yourself in a blanket or in a cloak. Qum, stand up, fa'anzir, and war. Wa rabbaka fakabbir. It's, of course, loudly saying that this is one of the first revelations coming to the Prophet. Wa rabbaka fakabbir, and glorify or mention the greatness of your Lord. Wa thiyabaka fatahhir, and clean your clothes for prayer or for whatever it means. Wa rabbaka fakabbir wa rizza fahjur, and keep away from evil. Wa li rabbika fasbir, now you are going to have a hard time. Surely you are going. So for your Lord, you have patience. Wa li rabbika fasbir. And then maybe فَإِذَا نُقِرَ فِي النَّاغُورِ, when the trumpet is blown, فَذَلِكَ يَوْمَئِذٍ يَوْمٌ عَسِيرٌ, maybe again the continuation of the first revelation after coming from Hira. Now, when Prophet of course received this revelation, he firmly stood up to of course disclose that revelation to the close family. Now, the first person who believed in the Prophet was Khadija, because she was expecting that all the time. She was expecting that day that it will come and Prophet Muhammad will be a prophet, as many other people expected that as well. So immediately after hearing what had happened, she believed in the Prophet. You might feel that, well, it was very natural. She should have believed in the Prophet because she lived with him, but that's not natural. I mean, people have their own individual opinions, identities, and especially a woman like Khadija, being 15 years older than the Prophet, she had firm opinions for herself. So if she did accept revelation in the first instance, it was due to her type of readiness to accept the call from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We have another story here. This is very interesting, because apart from Khadija, Prophet had a very, very close friend, very intimate friend before Ba'tha. His name was Uthman ibn Maz'un, and Amirul Mu'minin named one of his sons Uthman because he loved this Uthman ibn Maz'un very much. And Prophet liked Uthman ibn Maz'un very much. He himself says that when Prophet came to me, of course he was one of the first people to whom Prophet went and said that I am Prophet of God, so you have to believe in me. He says that when Prophet revealed his message to me, disclosed his message to me, I said, okay, I believe in you, but I really did not believe in him in my heart. Because I liked him, because he was my close friend. I didn't want to somehow annoy him, put him in distress. So I said, okay, I agree. But I did not believe. Until once we were talking with the Prophet. This was still when the call was very limited. We were talking to the Prophet, me and himself only, and suddenly I saw that he was distracted. And afterwards I asked him what happened. He said, Jibreel came to me, brought me a revelation. And I said, what was the revelation? What did he bring to you? He said, this was the verse, إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَأْمُرُ in Surah Nahl, إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَأْمُرُ بِالْعَدْلِ وَالْإِحْسَانِ وَإِيْتَاءِ ذِي الْغُرْبَى وَيَنْهَى عَنِ الْفَحْشَاءِ وَالْمُنْكَرِ وَالْبَغْيِ يَعِذُكُمْ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَذَكَّرُونَ. Allah commands you to justice and to doing good to everyone, عدل والإحسان, وإيتاء ذي القربى, and giving to your relatives. And Allah forbids you from indecency, from evil, from oppression. And Uthman says, when Muhammad recited this, I said, what this is conscience. This is my conscience. This is something that every human soul would like. Why shouldn't I? I was so ashamed of myself that I did not believe in him in the first place. So immediately the faith penetrated my heart. And I was so happy that I hugged the Prophet. I went everywhere and I said that now I am a true Muslim. So you can see, even a close friend of the Prophet like Uthman ibn Maz'un, and we are told that he was the first person who passed away in Medina, after migration. And the first person actually who was buried in Baqi, because Medina had another graveyard, and the Prophet allocated Baqi for a cemetery. And Uthman ibn Maz'un was the first person buried in Baqi, and that's why you see that anyone who passed away after him and Prophet actually had some sort of attachment to them. He stood on their grave and said, Al-Haq or Al-Haqi, depending whether they were males or females. Al-Haq or Al-Haqi, Bis-Salaf al-Salih, Uthman ibn Maz'un. Join our Salaf al-Salih, our righteous person who had passed away before us, Uthman ibn Maz'un. If someone like Uthman ibn Maz'un, liked by the Prophet so much, so close to the Prophet, could not believe in him in the first instance, well, we can imagine that Khadija, of course, was a grown-up, very, very mature lady, very experienced lady. She could have her own opinions about it. But immediately, she confessed faith in the message of the Prophet. And the story that she went to Waraqat ibn Nawfal, which is distorted somehow in Bukhari, taking the Prophet and asking what is this, is mentioned in other sources as actually Khadija going to Waraqa, who was a close cousin, and giving him the good tidings that the Prophet for whom we were waiting have come, Muhammad has been given the message. And this is more plausible to think that why Khadija went to Waraqa ibn Nawfal telling him about the incident of the revelation. Now, then of course naturally, the second person who believed in the Prophet was Ali, peace be on him, who was at a time probably 10, 12, 8, there are different accounts of the year of birth of Ali, peace be on him, but generally we assume that he was 10 years old. Now, it is again natural for Ali, because he was all the time with the Prophet, as he mentions himself, that when I was adopted by the Prophet, well, when I went to the Prophet's house, I did not separate from him any moment, and I was following the Prophet like a camel who is not yet weaned from her mother, following the she-camel, the mother. I was following the Prophet, and every day Prophet taught me one good code of manner and etiquette, and I learned it. And then he described what type of character Prophet had. So, of course, naturally, the second person was Ali. Third person, naturally Zayd, of course. Zayd, who was brought up in the house of the Prophet, was very much attached to the Prophet, and when Zayd was brought to Mecca, and his family became aware that he was captured in a battle and brought to Mecca, they came searching for him, and they found him with the Prophet. He was still a boy. And the father was very happy finding this son, and he told the Prophet, whatever money you want, I give you. Give me Zayd, my son. And Prophet said, well, I have already set him free. He's free to come with you or to stay here with us. And when Zayd's father spoke to him, and he said, he saw that how much Zayd was attached to the Prophet in that very short period, he was more than happy to leave his son there and go. And if Zayd was so much attached to the Prophet, therefore, of course, it was natural that Zayd also believed in the Prophet in the first instance. And this went on for several days before Prophet actually disclosed this to anyone else. And there is a story of Afif al-Kendi, who says that he was a businessman. He says that, I went to Mecca for my business once, and I saw a very, very strange thing. Because while I was sitting beside Kaaba, I saw a man came, he looked at the sky, and then the sun was in the middle of the sky, then he stood in front of Kaaba, and he started to bow down and go to prostration, and then after he stood, a lady came and joined him, and then after that a child came and joined him, and the three of them, they did the same thing, bowing, prostrating, And Abbas was my friend, Prophet's uncle. I went and asked him, what is this? This is very strange. I never have seen such a thing in my life. He said, that man is my nephew, Muhammad. He thinks that he received something from heaven. And that lady is his wife. And that boy is my another nephew, Ali. And these are the only three people who actually practice this faith. So this should have been at the very, very early stages of revelation. Yes.
You know, the account of Imam Ali being with the Prophet when he received the revelation. So how can you correlate between the fact that Khadija accepted the revelation and Imam Ali was with the Holy Prophet in the revelation that he accepted it second? Is that possible or...?
No, we don't know second and first. Probably the first person who became aware of the fact as a grown-up person, as someone who was not with the Prophet, was Khadija.
Okay.
Really, there are some historians who say you cannot say that Ali was the first person who, or second, or whatever, who confessed faith, because he never worshipped either. He was always Muslim. And we really cannot count Ali in this order of people confessing faith to Prophet or something like that. And we cannot separate Ali from the Prophet somehow. It's very, very difficult to separate him from. As in that account, Prophet said, "Innaka tasma'u ma asma wa tara ma ara." You hear what I hear, and you see what I see, but you are not a prophet. So we really cannot say Ali believed in the Prophet. It's very difficult to say that.
Very
difficult. Yeah.
And you also mentioned that the Holy Prophet was a Khadija and only referring towards the Kaaba. But this is, they must have had the knowledge that the Kaaba was going to change from...
The historians say, Prophet, even after this, Prophet usually stood towards the Kaaba, towards the north, on the side of the Kaaba which faced towards Baytul Muqaddas, towards the Quds. And this is how he prayed in Masjid al-Haram usually. Any other question?
Or to take all this topic you mentioned, Bangui and Mahfouz, did he not have a role in
Uhud as well? He passed away before that, Uthman bin Mazun. Yeah. He passed away before Uhud. Yes.
Which is the rukn that near that faces in the north?
I think that is between Hajar al-Aswad and Rukn al-Yamani. Rukn al-Yamani is the rukn that which immediately is before Hajar al-Aswad.
Mm-hmm. Because it would be in that same direction.
It would be, yeah, in the same direction. Yeah. Okay, then of course, after this immediate family of the Prophet, and of course Prophet was very lucky having this immediate family of himself believing in him. This was a support for him. Then many historians say it was Abu Bakr who confessed faith to the Prophet because he was also a friend of the Prophet. Some others say before Abu Bakr, Abu Dharr believed in the Prophet. And on every account, Abu Bakr was one of the first companions confessing faith to the Prophet. And then, of course, there were other people like Uthman ibn Affan, Zubayr ibn Awam, Talha ibn Ubaidullah. And it's strange that all these people actually later on stood against Ali ibn Abi Talib. This is very, very strange. And you see the irony of the history and the way Allah actually shows his sense of humor, isn't it? How the first people who believe in the Prophet then turn against his cousin and someone who was like the Prophet himself. And this shows that the test is always there, isn't it? The test always comes after we confess faith. Then the first injunction. The first injunction was Salah. It is said that on the second or third day of Ba'asa, after Revelation, Jibreel came to the Prophet and taught him. He taught him, he said, come, look at me. Jibreel made wudu. He came in form of human being. I said before that Jibreel sometimes came in form of human being, well, usually came in form of human being. And he taught the Prophet how to make wudu. And also he prayed. And Prophet learned that prayer from Jibreel. And he said that for 2 days, Jibreel came on 5 times and prayed with the Prophet. And on the 3rd day, Prophet was told that pray as the previous 2 days. The same time, the same thing. And of course, there is a disagreement here whether the whole 5 times prayer were actually established at the beginning or later on. Because some people say at the beginning it was only Fajr and Maghrib, or at the beginning it was only Zuhr and Maghrib, because there are different instances. The time when the 5 times prayers were established was when Surah Al-Isra was revealed. أَقِمِ الصَّلَاةَ لِدُلُوكِ الشَّمْسِ إِلَى غَسَقِ اللَّيْلِ وَقُرْآنَ الْفَجْرِ. So, perform Salat when the sun inclines towards the west, the Duluk al-Sham, until Ghasaq al-Layl, until when the night goes dark. So Jibreel told him what time? 4 times prayer, and then Quran al-Fajr, the recitation of the Fajr, Salat al-Fajr, you pray these 5 times. But it's not something which really concerns us, not very important when the 5 times of the prayer were revealed. And the other thing that we have to mention here is, according to Ibn Ishaq, the first man to believe after Zayd was Abu Bakr, and then Uthman, and then Zubayr ibn Awam. Why Uthman is mentioned immediately after Abu Bakr? It might have some political type of implication. Of course, Umar ibn al-Khattab could not be mentioned because it was known by everyone that he believed in the 6th year of the Bi'atha. So, then Zubayr ibn Awam, Talhat ibn Ubaidullah, Abdul Rahman ibn Auf, Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, the father of Umar ibn Sa'd, who killed Imam Hussein. As I said, this is the history is full of humor. And Malik ibn Uhayb. And these are mentioned as the first 8 people who believed. According to Ya'qubi, the above order is not correct, since Abu Dhar believed before Abu Bakr. And after Abu Bakr was Amr ibn Abasa, Khalid ibn Sa'id, Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, Utba ibn Ghazwan, and Khabbab ibn Arat, and Mus'ab ibn Umayr, the first person who was sent to Medina by the Prophet to teach Quran. We'll come to this Mus'ab ibn Umayr. Very, very interesting story he has. Now, the first blood ever spilt in Islam. This is, of course, very interesting. Because when Prophet somehow gathered some companions among himself, they used to pray in Jama'ah. And the first thing which came to the Prophet was Salah. And when they prayed in Jama'ah, people came, they divided, they mocked. Sometimes they attacked them. That's why they usually did not pray inside Masjid al-Haram. Of course, this was before the Muslims were being under persecution. Because at this time, Prophet was not saying anything about the idols. He had not mentioned anything bad about the idols. So no one actually felt that they have to stop them from this new religion. They just said this is a new religion. He believes that Allah is the only God, but he did not mention about other gods, the Prophet. So, usually what they did, they went outside Mecca, just on the outskirts of Mecca, and they used to pray in Jama'ah with the Prophet, sometimes, and sometimes, of course, in their groups. And in one of these instances, they were attacked. They were derided, they were attacked, and were attacked verbally rather than physically. However, Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas could not control himself, and he attacked one of those deriders, and he took a bone of a camel and hit him in the head, and the head was broken and lots of blood. And they say this is the first blood ever spilt in Islam. Spilt in Islam. And for this reason, Prophet told his companions not to pray outside anymore. He moved to a house. And his companions used to pray in that house. And he preached in that house. And he invited people in that house. Now that house was a very famous house. Of course, it belonged to Arqam ibn Abi al-Arqam. And his house was near Safa, which became the headquarters of Da'wah during the first 3 years of private court. And Arqam later became a scribe of the Prophet. Now, the first believers are sometimes divided to those who believed before the Prophet moved to Darul Arqam and those who believed after that. Because that's a sign of precedence in Islam. They say, for example, such person believed in Prophet before Darul Arqam or after Darul Arqam. Darul Arqam, I don't know whether it is still there or not. I think 10 years ago when I went, it was there. They made it a mosque later on. And it is one of those places which was visited until very recently, Darul Arqam, the place of initial da'wah of the Prophet. And some exegetes say that this verse at the end of Surah Isra, وَلَا تَجْهَرْ بِسَلَاتِكَ وَلَا تُخَافِتْ بِهَا وَابْتَقِ بَيْنَ ذَلِكَ سَبِيلًا. And do not recite loud in your prayer nor murmur it, but follow a middle course between them. Now usually exegetes cannot come to a conclusion about the meaning of this verse. Because what does it mean, a middle way? Do not recite loud, do not murmur, do not recite hiddenly, something in the middle. I think Allama Tabatabai mentions that it means that do not recite all your prayers in the same way. Salatul Fajr and Maghrib, you recite it loudly. Salatul Zuhr and Aas, you recite it with a murmur, for example. However, some exegetes say that after the incident of the attack of Sa'd ibn Abi Waqqas, because the Prophet didn't want to attack anyone, of course, and he was not happy that Sa'd attacked one of the mushrikun. So, after that incident, Prophet used to pray in his own house, not going out. And Allah says that do not hide for your prayer, and do not go out for your prayer. لا تجهر ولا تخافت. But do somewhere which is something in the middle. And Prophet went to Darul Arqam and his companions went there. Many of Muslimun actually believed in Darul Arqam. So Darul Arqam is a very famous type of place. Ammar bin Yasir, for example, he believed in Darul Arqam. And many others. They were taken to Darul Arqam to the Prophet, whoever wanted to come to Islam. Later this house was turned to a mosque close to Safa, and along with Baytul Mawlid and Bayt Khadija became one of the holy places to be visited in Mecca. I don't really know what has happened to all these houses, but they were there, say, about 50 years ago. Because in the book, many people have mentioned that we went and visited these places. So, first of all, the house in which Prophet was born, the house of Khadija, and this Darul Arqam, three places which have become somehow holy in Mecca. Now, after the first group, of course, of Mu'minun started to come together, for 3 years, as you know, Prophet did not invite anyone. Collectively. Individually, he invited people. People came to the Prophet rather than Prophet going to them. The religion was spread by word of mouth. And people came to the Prophet to hear about it. They became Muslims. And Prophet did not openly mention that. Until the Surah al-Shu'ara was in the third year of the Bi'tha. And in that Surah, the injunction, the order came from Allah that you have to warn your next of kin, your family. وَأَنْذِرْ عَشِيرَتَكَ الأقربين واخفض جناحك لمن اتبعك من المؤمنين. Warn the nearest of your kinfolk and lower your wing to the faithful who follow you. Means whoever comes to their faith, you have to be humble towards them. But if they disobey you, say, I am absolved of what you do, and put your trust in the Almighty, the All-Wise. Because this is a very, very hard type of order, command by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to the Prophet. So the Prophet is told, put your trust on Allah, the Almighty, All-Wise, and go ahead. Now, for this reason, immediately after the revelation of this verse, Prophet invited about 40 prominent members of his family. Not only Banu Hashim, of course, from other sub-tribes of Quraysh close to Banu Hashim as well. And he said that I am the messenger of God to you. Well, in the first occasion, actually, he bought some meat and he gave it to Ali to cook. And it was in a small pot. Or a pan or something like that. And actually when those 40 men came in, they thought how he's going to feed us with this small amount of food. And Prophet on purpose did this to show them that this is a miracle. And all of them ate from it and they were satisfied. And as soon as they did so, Abu Lahab laughed and said, well, of course everyone knew what Prophet wanted to tell them. So he said, this man has put us under a spell. And we better not sit here. And he left. And everyone left after him. And of course, you know, you can imagine how Prophet was disappointed. So for the second day, Prophet did the same thing and invited them. And what he told them is very interesting. He said that, of course, after they ate the food, he said, Wallahu alladhi la ilaha illahu. Inni rasulullahi ilaykum hassa. وإلى الناس عامة والله لتموتن كما تنامون ولتبعثن كما تستيقظون ولتحاسبن بما تعملون وإنها الجنة أبدا أو النار أبدا. By Allah, besides whom there is no God, I am the messenger of God to you in particular and to all people in general. By Allah, you die as you sleep and you are raised as you wake up. Because they don't believe in the judgment, of course. This is a new type of concept given to them. And you will be accounted for what you do. It will be either paradise forever or fire forever. And of course this is some shortest statement chosen from the speech of the Prophet there. And then he asked, who is going to give me a pledge to support me on this issue so that he would be my wasi and my akhi. My wasi and my akhi, and my inheritor, my wife. And no one, of course, said anything. Three times he repeated that until, and on all three occasions, Ali said, I will do that. And at the end, Prophet made the pledge with Ali, peace be on him. And this was another point of mocking and ridiculing for the people, because they said to Abu Talib, look, your nephew is telling you to obey your son after him. And everyone laughed and left. Now this story of, which is called Hadith al-Dar, about Ali ibn Abi Talib, that who will support me on the condition that he will be my successor, and my brother and my successor, and my inheritor, and so on and so forth, is so famous that almost all the historians and traditionists have reported it, and whether Sunnis or Shi'is, and somehow, of course, some parts of it have been eliminated from the books. Not that the scholars did it right, they have been eliminated later. There are new versions of Tabari published by Saudis in which the hadith is eliminated, and many other types of hadith eliminated from the book, because they think that they are the guardian of the faith of the people. These things, of course, should not be there. Although satanic verses could be in the book, in Tabari, but these things could not be there, and therefore they eliminate them. Well, whether immediately after this or after a while, another order came to the Prophet that now open completely, open your da'wah completely. And now, of course, everyone knew what the Prophet had done. He had invited 40 people, and you can imagine that the news was not going to be kept inside anymore. Everyone knew that what he was claiming. However, he was just saying that worship God. He was not saying anything more than that. When the open da'wah came, of course, he mentioned something about the idols. And this was the beginning of the bitterness between the Prophet and the mushrikun. They didn't want, of course, to destabilize Mecca by an internal trouble. However, now the trouble was coming. The Prophet was saying bad things about the idols. Now, Surah Hijr. Apparently, after Surah Shu'ara, a couple of surahs were revealed, and then Surah Hijr was revealed. And therefore, there was a gap between the first command, warn your close relative, and the second command of opening the da'wah. Now, the surah, verses in Surah Hijr, فَاسْتَعْ بِمَا تُؤْمَرْ وَأَعْرَضْ عَنِ الْمُشْرِكِينَ إِنَّا كَفَيْنَاكَ الْمُسْتَهْزِئِينَ الَّذِينَ يَجْعَلُونَ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَهًا آخَرَ فَسَوْفَ يَعْلَمُونَ. So proclaim what you have been commanded, and turn away from the polytheists. Indeed, we will suffice you against the deriders. Now, this shows the most terrible thing for the Prophet was actually those people who derided him. And this is, of course, you can imagine, you are a very respected person, suddenly you come with something which you feel is your duty, and everyone say that you are mad. Everyone say that you have gone out of your mind. And then, very, very funny things they say. As in the older ummah, of course, sometimes I listen to the arguments of atheists or people who are against faith. They say very funny things, of course, about the believers, about the faith, about God. And sometimes you read the Quran, you see exactly the same things were mentioned by people at the time of Noah, at the time of Abraham, for example. مَا هَذَا إِلَّا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ يَأْكُلُ مِمَّا تَأْكُلُونَ مِنْهُ وَيَشْرَبُ مِمَّا تَشْرَبُونَ. This is a human being like you. You eat fish, he eats fish. The same thing, isn't it? This is somehow ridiculing the bringing down the respect of these people. And he drinks the same thing that you drink. You drink water, you go to loo, they go to loo. And these type of things that they mention to somehow this break the respect of these type of people. And this was what Prophet was very much worried about. And they actually were very expert in this, with their poetry. With their poetry, they had the best expertise to deride the Prophet. And they did, to the best of their ability and capacity, they did actually deride the Prophet. However, the Quran says, do not worry about these deriders. Yes, you want to say something? No. إِنَّا كَفَيْنَاكَ الْمُسْتَهْزِئِينَ الَّذِينَ يَجْعَلُونَ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَهًا آخَرَ فَسَوْفَ يَعْلَمُونَ. So proclaim what you have been commanded and turn away from the polytheists. Indeed, we will suffice you against the deriders, those who set up beside Allah another God. Certainly, we know that you become upset because of what they say. And now you have to prepare for yourself for all these things. And so celebrate the praise of your Lord and be among those who prostrate. Now, when these verses were revealed, Prophet went on Safa and started to call tribes and everyone to come to him. And what he said was, Ya ma'ashara Quraysh, wa ya ma'ashara Arab, Inni Rasulullah ilaykum, ad'ukum ila ibadatillah wahda, wa tarak ibadatil asnam, التي لا تنفع ولا تضر ولا تخلق ولا ترزق ولا تحي ولا تميت. O people of Quraysh and O nation of Arab, I am the messenger of God to you. I call you to worship only Allah and reject the worship of idols who neither harm nor benefit, neither create nor sustain, and neither give life nor take life. Now, this was, of course, a type of intrusion into the territory of the idols now. And this is why Abu Lahab, when he was there, he said, "Tabban lak, may you be cut off, may you die because of what you say." And then, of course, the verse, the surah was revealed, "Tabbat yada Abi Lahab." He said, "Tabban lak, may you be cut off, may you die." And the verses said, "Tabbat yada Abi Lahab wa tab, ma aghna anhu maluhu wa ma kasab." Because Abu Lahab and his wife were both intellectuals at the time. And they were very good at deriding the Prophet and annoying him. And wherever he went, they went. Whenever Prophet gave a speech, Abu Lahab was there saying that, "Do not listen to this man. This is my nephew. I know he has gone mad." And this was something which really, really annoyed the Prophet, because it really undid whatever the Prophet tried to do. One of the accounts of someone who came to Mecca says that, "I saw once a man was going around and saying, 'Qulu la ilaha illallah tuflih,' say 'la ilaha illallah' and you will prosper." And then I saw another man going after him with red hairs, that the hairs were combed very nicely, and he had long hair, and he was saying that, "Do not listen to this man, he's my nephew and he's mad." And there are other occasions as well. And this Ummu Jamil tried to somehow bring thorns and other things, his wife, to put on the way of the Prophet. And that's why the verse mentions both of them. "Tabbat yada Abi Lahabin wa tab, ma aghna anhu maluhu wa ma kasab." Because he was very wealthy. His wealth and what he had achieved is not going to help him. "Wa mra'atuhu hammalat al-hatab," and his wife is someone who brings fuel. Of course, hatab were the thorns that she used to bring to put on the way of the Prophet. However, it says hammalat al-hatab is bringing the fuel of hell for herself and for her husband. "Hammalat al-hatab fi jidha hablum min masad." Now, the whole problem of Muslimun and the Prophet starts from here, when he actually started to proclaim his da'wah openly and mentioned the idols. And from here, of course, the Quraysh and others thought of a compromise, going to the Prophet saying that, "Do not mention our God, we worship Allah." Because up till now, they said, "Who is this Allah?" Sometimes even they mocked the Prophet, saying, because Prophet used to say, "Ya Allah, Ya Rahman." And then they said, "Oh, this is a Zoroastrian. He worships two gods, because he worships Allah and he worships Ar-Rahman." And that's why the verse was revealed, "Qulidu Allah, awidu Ar-Rahman, ayyamma tad'u falahu al-asma'u al-rusa." These are the two names for one thing, for one being, actually. And many other things. They try to compromise with the Prophet somehow. "Do not mention our idols, we worship Allah." And of course, the surah was revealed, "Qul ya ayyuha al-kafirun, la a'budu ma ta'budun, wa la antum a'buduna ma a'budu." "You Allah, I'm not going to worship Allah, and I'm not going to worship your idol." And they tried somehow to make a compromise, in the sense that, "You don't mention anything about our idols, and you are free to preach whatever you want about Allah." But now, of course, it was very late. The time had come. Allah had ordered the Prophet to reject the idols. And now the difficulties of the years of Mecca begins. Inshallah, we will cover this later on. Any question or comment?
Yes. The first calling to the kin, and then the immediate family after the first revelation and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then you covered some of the companions. I mean, sequentially, how did it happen? So you obviously, he obviously the immediate, the wife and Imam Ali and Zaid, they convert, then he stops going to the Kaaba.
Mm-hmm.
Then does he wait for 3 years, or there's already a bunch of people?
No, there were many people coming to him, actually. I mean, in those 3 years in which he did not openly invite anyone,
okay.
Maybe more than 100 people converted to Islam. Then, of course, by next of kin, we mean people like Abu Lahab, his uncle, his cousin, others who were very, very hard in their faith, in idols. These are the people who are actually the addressee of Ashiratuk al-Aqrabin. Okay, I'm going to Hajj, inshallah. So, if anything is wrong, you have seen from me, please forgive me. And inshallah, I will pray for you, you pray for me.